Hello everyone, and welcome to week four. We're working through a different kinds of difficult conversations. So today we're going to move into a different kind of difficult conversation. Before we do that, let's just review a little bit. So just to summarize, we've talked about three categories of conversations. One is those that are confrontational, responding to anger, conflict, diffusing a very, very tense and argumentative sort of situation or conversation. Next one is difficult ones that aren't in conflict but could lead to conflict. And then there's the thing which we'll deal with next week, hopefully, and that's just awkward conversations which are tense and you don't know what to say and things of that nature. And I wanted to show you something really, really beautiful that my nephew from America sent me yesterday on WhatsApp. You know, you get the most beautiful things on WhatsApp these days. This is a bit of English gematria. And I'll tell you why I'm bringing it in now. Because a lot of this has to do with changing the way we think and approach things. So I don't know if you can see that, but he says, if the ABC all the way to Z corresponds to numbers, in other words, if A equals 1 and B equals 2 and so forth, then knowledge will equal 96, and hard work will be 98. And he says, they're both important, but they fall short of 100%. Attitude equals 100%. And the reason I brought that in is because a lot of what we're talking about is about changing the way we think, essentially changing our attitude, changing the way we understand conversations, changing the way we understand other people and relationships and so on and so forth. So, what we've established is the foundations of all three foundations of all conversations, which is don't avoid them, ensure that they're human conversations as opposed to signal sending, as we've talked about at length, and that every conversation is preceded by humility and thought, which was the Yaakov, Leah, and Rachel formula that we talked about the first week. Now, last week we also talked about confrontational conversations, right? And we talked about the concept of every conversation being part of being really having three conversations. The what happened conversation, which is the background, right? Someone responded in anger, someone hurt you, someone did something really wrong that you're very upset about. So you come to the conversation with assumed knowledge. And that's what we talked about last week, about understanding we have to leave that behind or reframe it or re-understand or reprocess what we actually come to the table with. And we talk about the feelings conversation, about the importance of expressing feelings but not venting, expressing feelings in a constructive way, and also how the conversation shapes our own identity. And essentially one of the most important concepts we dealt with last week was this idea of starting to live with the value that we all talk about, but yet it's very hard to understand and absorb and internalize properly, and that is that there's not a right and a wrong, but there's different perspectives, and understanding that the background knowledge and the assumed background that we have when we come to a conversation is not necessarily the same background that the other person has or the same perspective. And therefore, one of the things we have to do with respect and with calmness is to explore the perspective of the other person, and then we can have a respectful conversation and hopefully diffuse a confrontational situation, which is a very, very difficult thing to do, of course, but that's the key. Okay. Now, today I want to move to the second type of conversation, which is a conversation which I call the tense conversation, right? The tense discussion, which is a discussion that is not in response to anger, it's not in response to a conflict, but it's a difficult conversation to have, and it's one that you don't want to have or you want to keep avoiding because you're worried about the consequences. You're worried about the response of the person. You're worried about the potential confrontation. And the definition of it is as follows, right? We're talking about a conversation where things are going along fine between you and another person. However, everyone knows that the underlying problems, or you know there's an underlying problem which needs to be addressed. But not that it's at the forefront now. It's not causing any problems right now, but it's something waiting to explode. But it's okay now, so to speak. Or it's like the elephant in the room. You know, there's the kind of elephant in the room which no one's addressing, but it needs to be addressed. So it's a type of the conversation where we know that the conversation is necessary. It needs to happen, but we keep avoiding it. Why do we keep avoiding it? Because We're scared of rejection. We're scared. We don't want to be rejected. We're scared of response. We're scared of an outburst. We're scared how it's going to be perceived, and therefore we keep avoiding that conversation. Right? Now the truth is, now we're going to give examples in a moment, but the truth is that as difficult as these conversations are, when we have them, we realize that people appreciate the truth if it's done properly. Right? You'd be very disappointed to know that someone's been thinking something that you're not even aware of, or has an issue with you that you're not aware of that's been going on for months and months, and just they haven't brought it up. Right? People at the end of the day, if it's done correctly, appreciate honesty, appreciate the truth, and appreciate knowing where they stand. Doesn't have to be done too much, but they appreciate it in a way where they can understand where they are, they can understand where they hold with you, they can understand what needs to be fixed, they can understand where they stand with you in terms of various issues. Even more than that, one of the things that often happens with these difficult conversations, with these tense conversations, there's one thing worse than avoiding a conversation. And that is having the conversation with everyone else except for the person you have to have it with. Right? And that's such an annoying thing. And people know this. Like, I once saw a school that put out a little thing and they said, if we're doing something right, please tell everyone else. If we're doing something wrong, tell us. Don't go tell the whole town. Tell us so we can fix it. So we know what the problems are. We know what the issues are. We know what the consumer is thinking, so we know how we can address it, right? Because people, I mean, and sometimes people do this. There's a problem you have with someone. It's a very difficult thing to bring up. You don't want to bring it up with someone, but you don't want to bring up with that particular person, but instead we go and share with everyone else. So that everyone else is talking, and suddenly the guy finds out that he was the only person in the dark, right? And people really appreciate when that doesn't happen. You know, I once had a thing, just a little silly personal experience. The context was a Shabbat morning, whatever the case. I did something that I upset someone. Inadvertently, completely inadvertently. I forgot to tell someone something. Whatever the case was, I really, really upset someone. So it could have really, just the situation, I'm going to go into little details, but the situation was it could have blown out of proportion as these things tend to do. Right? Things fester, they get out of control, this one says something to that one, this one misinterprets, this one makes a rumor, this one exaggerates, and from nothing, a whole problem can evolve. Right? And thankfully, someone else in the community came to me the next morning and had a very simple, difficult conversation that took 15 seconds. But he did it really, really nicely. Because people often, I don't want to tell him, I don't want to upset him. God just came to me straight and said, look, I know you'd want to know this, but I don't know what the background is, and I'm sure you didn't mean to do this, but I just want you to know that you really upset so-and-so yesterday. And I said to him, thank you so much for telling me. So I just went to the next step and had the second conversation, which is also difficult, and that's to apologize. I called up the guy and said, listen, I really didn't know, and I'm sorry, I actually forgot to tell you something. And I'm really sorry. He says, thank you so much for calling. In less than 24 hours, the whole thing was over. A situation that could have blown out of control. Why? Because someone had a difficult conversation, it came to me, it was difficult for him to come to me, he didn't want to upset me, he thought I'd insult me. He just came very nice, he didn't insult me at all. It was an inadvertent mistake, I didn't mean anything. It wasn't a blame thing, it was just I forgot to tell someone something, and I really forgot, and I apologized. But he just told me, look, it's hard for me to tell you this, but I need you to know, you probably want to know this, that you upset this guy really badly yesterday. And that was it, and it was all over. So just sometimes we just need to plunge and find out how to do these things properly and have them rather than avoid them, or rather than tell everyone else. So what type of conversation are we talking about? So what I want to do is just give you a few examples. I'm going to divide it into sort of four groups, four like subcategories. One category of a difficult conversation at that level is when you're asking for something. You're asking for something that's difficult to ask for. For example, you lend someone money, a close friend, they've forgotten to repay you. And it's really months and months, and it's way overdue, and you know it's difficult for you, it's embarrassing, it's awkward. So asking a friend to repay a loan. Or for example, asking for a raise. Asking for a raise when it's a difficult thing to do. So you're working for someone, you've been working hard, you're dedicated, you think you deserve a raise, you're not sure how the boss is going to react, you want to ask for it, you don't ask for it, so you just become upset, but you're scared to ask for it because you don't want to be rejected. Or you don't want to be told what you think you're working so hard, you don't want to be told, you don't want to be given criticism, so you play safe and you avoid the conversation rather than ask for something which maybe will be given to you and maybe you really deserve, right? So that's one example of a tense conversation where you're asking for someone You're asking someone for something that's difficult to ask for. The second one is a conversation where you create boundaries. So for example, you need to end the relationship. It could be with a friend that's just invading your space and just really creating a toxic and unhealthy situation. The person could really want to be close to you and keep bothering you, and you need to keep your distance, you need to break it. And it could be the other person has no idea that there's a problem. And you need to have a conversation where you just need to create a boundary, create a space. Or a person needs to create boundaries with their own parents, sometimes with older parents. Some people grow older, they start a family, and parents interfere or overstep boundaries, and you want to respect them, and there's a mitzvah to respect them, but you need to create certain boundaries. Or you want to ask in-laws, parents-in-law, not to interfere. I always joke with my mother-in-law that I had a very simple strategy with this one. I just moved 10,000 miles away. It was very simple. Right? No, she's a great lady. Don't get me wrong. So that's another example of a tough conversation. These can be very difficult conversations. And this type of conversation particularly, often people don't have until they explode. Until something really gets on your nerves, and you say the wrong thing, and you insult, and you create untold hurt and offense for who knows how long. When it could have been avoided with a constructive, respectful, but difficult conversation. The third one is criticism. So you need to give feedback to someone, negative feedback to someone that's close to you. Right? Could be a close friend, and someone who you care about. And because you care about that person, you need to really highlight something that they've done wrong, or that they're doing wrong, that they need to fix. And it's something you wouldn't want to tell someone else, but you would want to tell a close friend because you care for them. Right? It's giving him a bad name maybe, or it's putting them into trouble. And you need to share with them something that they need to know about, and you need to give criticism, and we have a responsibility. In fact, giving criticism is a moral responsibility when it's done correctly. Right? It says in the Torah, I want you to reprimand a close friend, for doing something wrong. Because we have a moral responsibility to each other, to support each other, to enhance each other's personal growth, spiritual growth, and so on and so forth. And therefore we need to give it. And it's the people who we'd want to give it to are people who are close to us, because we care for them. And the people that are most difficult to give it to are the people that are close to us and we care for them. We don't want to create a rift. We have a beautiful relationship. We don't want to create a wedge between us potentially. Right? Or at work, you're doing a performance review on a colleague or an employee, and you need to go and tell someone that they're doing something wrong, and it's bothering you, and it's messing up the office, or it's messing up the business, or whatever the case is. Or you need to confront a boss. A person could have a figure of authority that's higher than them, that's really mistreating them, and maybe even unintentionally, but you need to confront it. You need to, otherwise you'll just keep on reoccurring. And therefore that's a very, very difficult conversation. There's no conflict at the moment. Things seem to be going on fine. It's a bit of an elephant in the room. The boss doesn't even know there's a problem. And it's a conversation you need to have. Or, as I put in the fourth one, just miscellaneous things. For example, returning something to a store when it's embarrassing. You're not sure how they're going to take it. You know, the thing came all packaged nicely and it should be working and it's not. And you think maybe they'll suspect you of breaking it, but you know sincerely that it's not. It was broken to begin with. You want to return it. All these type of things. Or to apologize. Apologies are sometimes the most difficult conversations to have. Or you've been asked to mediate, you get involved in a very difficult mediation and to have conversations with two people where you know it's potentially explosive and it's very, very difficult. So all these are examples of conversations which are put all into one category, which is conversations where there's no current conflict. There are problems, but no current conflict, but there's danger of the conversation going wrong, and therefore it's very difficult to have those conversations, but yet very necessary. Okay, now, before we talk about strategy, let's understand the goals of these conversations. Okay. What do we have to have in mind before we have a conversation like this? Truth is, any conversation, but particularly in this area. These are five goals we have to have in mind, which are critical. Before we enter into conversation, five things that we have to bear in mind that are necessary to achieve before we can have a conversation. The first is something I've mentioned many, many times, is that we have it's a biblical command actually in the Torah, not to bear hatred in our heart. Right? Now I've explained, what does that mean? I've explained this before. That means the following. If someone has done something to you, if you are bothered by something, Right, I'm just going to review it because it's really, really important. I know many of you have heard this many times. But if someone has done something to you and you have hurt in your heart and it's bothering you, there are only two choices. One choice is that it stops bothering you. And that's an ideal. We should become less needy and less bothered and less sensitive, and that's good. We should always work on our character that not everything should bother us. And therefore things, there are a lot of, you know, small things we have to learn to be able to let go. That's an ideal. But there are things that we find difficult to let go. We're all human beings. We all have some sensitive egos. We all have work to do on our personality. And until we perfect, which is about the time that we leave this planet, we all, right, which is, then we all are going to have struggles, and there are going to be things that people do or say that bother us, whether it's legitimate or not legitimate, but it's very difficult to let go. It's those times where we have to have a conversation. Because the worst option is to let things fester in our hearts. As it says in the verse, do not hate your friend in your heart. Now obviously hating someone is altogether bad. But when we say do not hate your friend in your heart, what that means is the worst thing a person can do is to let resentment and hatred fester in one's heart. It's not good for the person who's doing the hating. It destroys our personality, it increases unhappiness, it breeds resentment, it breeds negativity, it puts us in a bad mood. It'll do everything wrong for our personality and for our personal growth. And ultimately, it's negative for the relationship, even though we think sometimes that it's good for the relationship because we'll just keep the peace rather than have the conversation. But eventually, it never works. Eventually, we end up exploding, getting angry, saying things we shouldn't say, or cutting off the relationship. And therefore, it always ends up damaging the relationship and not achieving what we thought it would achieve to keep the peace, so to speak. Right? So the first goal is we cannot let resentment live in our heart. Either we get rid of it, or we deal with it and we have a conversation. And as I said a few weeks ago, one thing we should never do is we should never fool ourselves into thinking we're over it when we're not. Right? Because often that's people say I'm over it, and the more people say I'm over it, it means they're not. And therefore, right, so therefore we have to learn to deal with it. The second goal in having a conversation is to understand that the goal, and this is crucial, the goal of the conversation, or the goal of all communication, is connection, not division. Right? And that's why planning a conversation is so important. Right? Which means as follows. The most difficult conversation that we're going to have, even if it means highlighting negativity, even if it means delivering really, really tough news, even if it means a temporary damage and break in our relationship, if that's what needs to happen, and sometimes it does, the goal of communication is to connect people. Let's bear that in mind. The whole uniqueness of the communication, the whole reason that people are called the communicators, we talked about a few weeks ago, medaber, is because the human uniqueness is the ability to connect to the world of another. The goal of communication is connection. And that's difficult because sometimes the discussions we have don't seem to connect us. They seem to drive us further away from each other. But even in those conversations, we have to bear in mind, we have to steer the conversation as much as possible, that the outcome of the conversation should be connecting rather than dividing. Therefore, if we go and have the conversation the wrong way, and the outcome of the conversation is we've caused greater division than before the conversation, we know it was the wrong way to have the conversation. So conversations need to be had, but the goal of the conversation is connection, not division. Right? Which leads into the whole concept of peace and unity. Right? We know that when God created the world, we've talked about this before, there were 6 days of creation. Every single day, God, when He finished creating, it says He saw what He had done, v'hine ki tov, and it was good. So the first day He created light, and He said it was good. The fourth day He created the sun, the moon, He said it was good, and the animals, the fish, and so on and so forth. On the last day it says, v'hine tov mod, it was very good, the whole creation. There's one day where it doesn't say the word ki tov. That's Monday. Why? The sages tell us that on Monday, machloikus was created, division, conflict was created. Conflict is also a creation. How's it represented in the second day? Because it was the second day where God said, let there be a division between the upper waters and the lower waters, and that's when He created the heaven and the expanse. The heaven was there to divide between what He calls the lower waters and the upper waters. Monday was division day. Now there's a role for division, there's a role for conflict, as we've talked about in the past, but it's not good in its essence. The Talmud tells us that God didn't give us the greatest vessel for blessing, the greatest context that we can live in to receive God's blessing is shalom, peace. We, in fact, there's a little sentence we say in our prayers, which is interpreted very beautifully by some commentaries. At the end of every Amidah, there's an expression we say, Barcheinu Avinu Kulanu Ke'echad. Bless us, our Father, all as one. Simply what that means is, bless all of us as one. In other words, bless us all. But on a deeper level, actually, if we put the comma in a different place, it means something very different. We say, Barcheinu Kul Avinu, bless us, our Father. When will that happen? Kulanu Ke'echad, when we're all as one. When there's unity. Right? Now again, unity doesn't mean we all think alike, but unity does mean that there's peace between us. Next week, we're going to have, at the end of next week, we're going to have the Festival of Shavuot. Right? Festival of Shavuot was the time that we commemorate the ultimate experience in Jewish history, the defining moment for the Jewish nation, which was 7 weeks after they came out of Egypt, they stood at Mount Sinai and we got the Torah. We received the Torah at Mount Sinai. The Jews arrived in Mount Sinai on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, 6 days before the event, on the first day of the month of Sivan. And we are told, it says in the Pasuk, in the verse, it says that when they arrived there, they had gone through, they had left Egypt 7 weeks, 6 weeks before, they had gone through many stations, many stops on the way, stopped and started and traveled, and eventually they came to the place called Midbar Sinai, the desert of Sinai, where we had the mountain of Sinai. And there it says that the Jews camped there. They camped. Every time the Jews would stop throughout their 40 years in the desert, they actually went through 42 different journeys. Some were short, some were very long. Every time they would travel, it would say, Vayis'u, they traveled. Every time they would stop, it would say, Vayachanu, and they camped. When it came to the time that they camped at Mount Sinai, it doesn't say in the plural, you know, in Hebrew everything's conjugated, it doesn't say in the plural, Vayachanu, and they camped. It says, Vayichan Sham Yisrael. And Israel camped there in the singular, as if he camped in the singular. Why our sages tell us? Because when they arrived at Mount Sinai, they camped in unity. They camped like one man with one heart. Right? And it was then that God said, okay, now as a nation, now you can get the Torah. Because there's nothing greater than unity, nothing greater than being together. So I'm mentioning that because when we enter into a conversation, particularly a difficult conversation, understanding that communication is there to create connection, not division, also helps when we understand the third goal, and that our goal generally always has to be to enhance unity, to enhance peace, to bring us closer, to bring closeness, to create greater connection, to create greater unity, to create a situation where people are coming more together rather than drifting away. That's the goal of the conversation, which sometimes is hard because it can be a difficult conversation, but it's a goal. It's an important goal. At the same time, we come to the fourth goal. And this is an important one. That while our goal is to create peace and unity, but it's not at the expense of our individuality. So part of the conversation has to be the preservation of individuality. Right? Because as we talked about before, a relationship does not mean where two people come together and mold into something different. A relation means when two individuals come together, two different individuals come together, different worlds, different views, different perspectives, and yet can be a unit. Unit while maintaining that individual viewpoint, individual perspective, maintaining the individuality. Okay? So therefore, when we have a conversation, and we say that the goal of the conversation is to bring us close together, a conversation doesn't just mean where we give in to everything. That's not a conversation. That's compromising our own individuality. Now, that doesn't mean compromise isn't a good thing, and that doesn't mean that giving in is not a good thing. Giving in is a great virtue. People who don't always stand their ground and can give in, that's a greatness. But it's a greatness when it comes from the right place. Not when it comes from the point of view of undermining myself to be a doormat so at all costs I keep the peace. There are people like that. They're martyrs. They just keep the peace. Whatever happens, they'll do anything. Eventually, they give birth to a lot of resentment because it's not a goal. The goal in any relationship is not for one person to be a doormat and the other person to get whatever they want. That's not a relationship. A relationship is two people to come together, to grow together, to think together. As Dr. Pelkowitz says, not to think alike, but to think together, to work on things together, to to be able to create a relationship which is a harmony between differences, between two different people, but two different strong people, two different individuals, two different unique individuals. And therefore, part of when we enter into a difficult conversation, in whatever case it is, the goal has to be to preserve that individuality. And finally, the goal is always, the way we speak, always is to protect the dignity of human beings. One of the greatest things that's talked about in the Talmud is the protection of the dignity of the human being. In fact, there are even some mitzvot, even some laws in the Torah, which are suspended when they compromise the dignity. It's a complicated discussion, but there are certain laws that the Talmud discusses that sometimes are suspended because they compromise the dignity of the person. The Talmud tells us that there's three cardinal sins: murder, idolatry, and adultery. Those are the three worst things a person can do, we are taught. And then the Talmud tells us that someone who embarrasses another person, particularly in public, is compared to a murderer. Right? It's personality murder, assassination, rather than physical assassination. When we compromise a person's dignity, it's like murdering the person. Embarrassing another human being is considered one of the worst transgressions in the Talmud. And yet, sometimes when we get into a very difficult conversation, and emotions run high, and people push each other's buttons, and people say things that other people don't want to hear, and we become defensive or threatened, and then we start to become aggressive, we say things that compromise the dignity of a human being. A conversation can never or should never take place when we're putting down the other person. It can be a very tough conversation. We can have to deliver very, very tough words, but it can never come together with compromising the dignity of another person. Okay. Are we clear? So these are the five goals. We cannot bear resentment in our hearts. We have to create connection, not division, the greatness of peace and unity, but at the same time, preservation of the individuality and protecting the dignity. That becomes difficult. Why? Because, for example, if we have to have a tough conversation, but we decide to avoid the conversation, so we might achieve some of these goals, right? We might keep the peace and unity. We might even preserve our own individuality, but we will compromise number one. We will not achieve number one. So we'll walk around with resentment because we haven't had the conversation. Eventually, we can temporarily, short-term, create connection or division, but eventually it'll lead to division because in our heart we'll feel angry. Right? So avoiding a conversation never works, because if you avoid a conversation, you only achieve some of these goals, some of them only short-term, but you certainly don't achieve all the goals. On the other hand, having a conversation badly, like an aggressive conversation, which often people do, the two most common strategies is to avoid the conversation or have an aggressive conversation. Those, if you did a survey, you'd see those are the two most found ones, and those are the two worst ones, right? But if you have an aggressive conversation, you'll achieve goal number one, you'll get the resentment out of your heart, but not very constructively. But you won't be creating connection, creating division, you'll be creating disunity. You'll probably compromise dignity because you'll say something that you shouldn't say. Right? So therefore, the goal to address this whole issue is about having the difficult conversation in a way where you achieve all the goals. And that's the difficulty. That's the challenge. To have a difficult conversation where you're having the conversation so there's no resentment in your heart, you're dealing with the issue, you're taking away the elephant in the room, but at the same time, it's done in a way where you're creating connection, you're not compromising the dignity of the other person, you are preserving your own individuality, all those goals are coming together, and that's the way to have this difficult conversation. So the question is how? What's the formula? So I'm going to share with you a number of different strategies. The first one is what I call the Mount Sinai formula. Or to use the words of Stephen Covey, courage and consideration. What do I mean by the Mount Sinai formula? We know, and I've sure mentioned this before, but the Talmud tells us and explains to us why the Torah was given on a mountain and Mount Sinai. Why was it given on Mount Sinai? So the Talmud tells us this symbolic sort of midrash, where God was looking for he wanted to give the Torah on a mountain, and he was looking for different mountains. And there were various mountains who put themselves forward as candidates. That's what the Talmud describes. Tall, wide, strong, great mountains. Why? Because they felt they would be the appropriate mountain, so to speak, for the Torah to be given, given their strength, their stature, and so on. And God ignored all of them, except for the one that didn't put themselves forward as a candidate, which was the Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai was the lowest of all the mountains in the region. Okay. So he chose to give the Torah on Mount Sinai because Mount Sinai is a symbol of humility. And we are taught that the prerequisite to spiritual growth, the prerequisite to Torah study, the prerequisite to becoming God's nation, is the concept of humility. In fact, the Talmud tells us that one of the things that God hates the most is ego and arrogance. He says, it says in the Talmud that God says he can tolerate almost anything, but he cannot tolerate an arrogant person. So if someone has arrogance, and he's haughty, and he boasts, that type of person, it says, God says, I and him are not able to coexist. God, the infinite God, he can put up with everything, but he sort of, so to speak, cannot put up with an arrogant person. So he gave the Torah on a mountain, because the mountain symbolizes humility. So the famous question that the commentaries ask, if giving the Torah the ultimate Jewish event in history, when we became God's nation, was so important that it should be emphasized that there's the concept of humility, so you should have given it in a valley. Why a mountain? If you give it in a mountain, you're already starting with a problem. A mountain is already tall. Any mountain, even a Mount Sinai, even a short mountain. And the answer is a very simple but very important answer. And the answer is that humility doesn't mean to lose who you are. Humility doesn't mean to lose your own personality, to lose your own identity. That's not humility. Humility means you can be a mountain and still be humble. Humility means that you have a strength, you have a personality, you have talents, you have an identity, and yet you're humble. Because you understand that those talents and those strengths don't make you superior to other people. You're not arrogant because of those strengths and because of those talents and because of that identity. You understand you didn't create it, it's God-given, it's a gift from God, you just need to nurture it and take responsibility for it and develop it. But to be humble as a valley is no point. To be humble as a mountain, that's true humility. And therefore, when you go into a tough conversation, the perspective has to be that I go into this conversation as Mount Sinai. I go into this conversation remembering that there's two things that have to coexist at the same time. I'm a mountain, so I'm going in with confidence. I'm going with strength. Otherwise, I wouldn't have the conversation. And yet, I'm going in with extreme humility. Humility, so therefore, that I don't portray myself as being arrogant over the other person, superior to the other person. I don't come across condescending. I don't come across aggressive. I don't come across as putting the other person down. I don't come across as being better than the other person, even though I might be having a very tough conversation. I might even be criticizing them, but it doesn't come out that I'm better than them. I have the confidence to have the conversation. And I also have the confidence, and this is an important part, this is part of the Mount Sinai, the mountain aspect. I have the confidence not to define myself by the perception of the other person. You see, one of the biggest problems why we avoid difficult conversations is because of something we've talked about many times. That we tend to define ourselves by the perception of other people. So I don't want to have the conversation with you because I'm scared what you're going to think about me afterwards. You're going to go, I'm scared you're going to walk out of the room and say, oh, chutzpah, who does he think he is? And I don't want to be thought about like that. Right? It might be subconscious, but if you think about it, we all think like that. We all are very scared to be defined negatively by other people because we define our own identity by that, which is the biggest mistake a person can do. We've talked about this so many times. We all have intrinsic value. We all have an intrinsic soul, an intrinsic goodness. We don't need to be defined or to be created by other people. And our own identity is created by the goodness and the strengths and weaknesses that we ourselves have and that we need to take responsibility for and we need to nurture. Yes, of course, we shouldn't go around doing things that upset other people because we have a responsibility to other people. We have a responsibility to live socially in a positive way and to be respectful and so on and so forth. So, of course, we have a certain element of people pleasing which is healthy. It's the obsession that we have with it that is a problem. It's an obsession that we hold ourselves back from doing stuff because what are people going to think? It's an obsession of driving ourselves crazy and getting under stress. This filters into so many areas of life. Someone knocks at the door and we're freaking out because the The house is not 100% tidy, even though we had such a bad day, no one would expect us for the house to look, you know, tip-top. But the guy might think, I'm a schloch, you know, it's terrible. Who cares what he thinks? I'm a pretty decent person, I'm an organized person, so am I, okay? You know. But that's what we do, because we define ourselves by the way people think and the way people look at us. We sometimes drive ourselves so crazy because we don't want to elicit a negative opinion from someone else. And having a difficult conversation is exactly the same thing. Part of the reason that we avoid these tough conversations is because we don't want a negative reaction from other people. We don't want you to think, I don't want you to think bad. If I criticize you, what are you going to think about me? So we need to go into the conversation being a mountain, a Mount Sinai, a strength, having confidence. Having confidence to have the conversation. Having confidence not to be defined by the conversation. Having confidence to put forward a point of view and to preserve it and to stand our ground, so to speak, with that point of view. But it only works if at the same time we're going in as a Mount Sinai, as a small mountain, as a humble mountain, where we really, truly care. What is humility? Humility at the end of the day means we make room for others because we're not superior to others. And we care about others. And that our conversation is set in a way where it comes with strength, but it comes with deep consideration and care for the other individual. That we really take them into account. We make room for their identity, for their personality within our own personality. Talmud says that the words of the wise are always heard calmly. A wise person talks calmly. You know, I've done some teacher training. I always tell teachers like this. Teachers tend to raise their voices sometimes when they want to reprimand the students. I said, let me tell you when you have to raise your voice. Raise your voice when you're explaining the passage. That's when you should scream and shout and throw and show enthusiasm so everyone can see you're excited about the piece of Chumash or Talmud or English or Maths that you're teaching. But when you need to reprimand someone, go low. Sometimes teachers do it the other way around, it's a problem. But talk softly. Talk with care. Talk with strength. With assertiveness, but talk with care. Because when you talk with care and it comes across sincerely, the Talmud also says that words that come from the heart enter the heart. If it comes from a place of sincerity, if it comes from a place of humility, if it comes from a place of care, then it enters the heart of the other person. You know, I'll tell you a story of not so much a tough conversation, but a tough situation. One of our favorite stories. There was I think he passed away about 70, 80 years ago. There was a great Lithuanian sage that lived in the land of Israel. It was called the Chazon Ish. And he was once consulted by a principal of a school. So I'm telling you the story, I want to give you an example of what I mean in terms of having a tough conversation. And the principal of the school approached the Chazon Ish. He had a real problem. There was a student in the school who was really destroying the school. He was not just misbehaving for himself, but he was just so aggressive and so out of line and so undisciplined that he was literally undermining the entire student body. And therefore the educators in the school had convened and met and they'd come to a conclusion that there's really no other way. We have to remove this child. We have to expel this student from the school. Now expelling a student from the school is a very, very big move. Sometimes it has to be done, but it's a very big move. And particularly in areas at that time, there weren't a lot of strong Jewish schools that these type of students wanted to go to. And therefore there was a real danger that it became obvious that for the school it would be beneficial to expel the child, but for the child wouldn't necessarily be beneficial. It might actually destroy it. He might just give it up and go away from the Jewish path and just leave it all behind and really become angry, and who knows, it will be really a child at risk. So although the educators of the school had decided that the right thing to do is to expel the child, they decided they want to sort of seek some sort of higher authority, so they went to the Chazon Ish to discuss whether they have halachic or moral permission and guidance to be able to do that. So the Chazon Ish listened to them and he thought through the whole concept. And he told them the following. He said, I understand what you're saying. And on halachic grounds, there's definitely a reason to expel this child. Because there's a concept in Jewish law, yachid v'rabim. If an individual is, you have to care about every individual, but when there's a balance, a conflict between the individual and the whole, and many, then the many prevail. So if it's about caring for this child versus for caring for everyone else in the school, so then you have no choice, you have to ask the child to leave. However, he said to the principal, I'm going to give you permission on one condition. That when you expel the child, you tell the child that you're willing to every night, every evening, make time in your home to sit and study with him individually. If you offer the child that you'll study with him in an individual basis on your own, you can expel the child. And the story apparently has a continuation where that's exactly what happened. And the child didn't leave, and the child actually formed a very, very good relationship with the principal out of school and grew up to be a fine guy. What was the concept? I think I want to translate the same idea into conversations. In other words, when we have a conversation that's tough, we have to always examine, where is it coming from? Where's the source of the conversation? Is it coming from my ego? In other words, coming from my frustration? Is it about me? Or is it about us? You follow? In other words, a conversation that has to be had because something needs to be said and an issue needs to be resolved, that's okay. But it's got to come from a sincere, humble place. And a humble place means it comes for the benefit of all of us. It's not about my self-interest. It becomes a strong conversation, a difficult conversation, but a selfless one, not a selfish one. And if I have to criticize someone, or I have to tell someone off, or I have to ask for something that's maybe very difficult, or I have to end the relationship, or I have to create boundaries, whatever it is, it's a very difficult conversation if this conversation is coming from my frustration and my needs, and it's all about me, or if it's about the situation and what's better for all of us. It comes with care and it comes with concern. It's the same tough conversation. It's the same boundaries. He still expelled the child, but it was a very difficult message. If he would have expelled the child with not offering him that, the message would have been, I don't care about you. I'm just expelling you because you're a nuisance and you're a pain in the neck and you're destroying the school. Goodbye. Offering him to learn with him every night was a totally different message. The message was, unfortunately, we can't have you in the school because the way you're behaving and the warnings and all the whole process we've gone through just doesn't allow the school to function properly. But it's with deep care and concern for you. And in fact, it's not even good for you to stay in the school, because if you stay in the school, you're staying in a destroyed school, a dysfunctional school, and I really deeply care about you. So we're going to have to figure something out. You can't be in the school, but I want to care for you. I want to help you. Very difficult, very different conversation. And that's a very severe situation, but I'm talking about even in very simple conversations. The tone of voice, the language that we use, every bit about the conversation, it's very difficult if it comes from humility, if it comes from arrogance. And therefore, the first strategy, in entering into a difficult conversation is walking into the conversation with a mountain, but a humble one, a Mount Sinai. Having a mountain, but a small mountain. Strength, confidence to have the conversation, confidence not to be put off by any response, but yet with humility, with care, with concern. So for example, if you, in any one of the categories we talked about before, if you're asking for something that's difficult to ask for, if you're asking for a raise because you think you deserve one, the outcome will be a lot better. There's a much better chance if the message to the boss is all about me and I deserve one, I've worked so hard, so then you'll put him off. If the message is, we work hard, it's better for the company, I'll be able to be more dedicated, it's better for you, it's about us, not about me, the chances are much better and it's easier to have the conversation. It's the same outcome, but a very, very different conversation. Right? If we're creating boundaries, even if we're ending a relationship or we're asking people to step back, it's more about, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, you're doing this to me, you're driving me crazy, goodbye. Or is it about what's better for both of us? Or is it about, I understand what you want to do. I understand that maybe you want to interfere a bit too much. And I understand you're doing it out of concern. It's well intended. It's just, I can't operate like that. So therefore, if I can't operate like that, it's not going to be good for any of us. Right? It's a very different conversation, very respectful conversation. It's about us rather than about me. I'm doing the conversation. It's hard. I'm going to stand my ground. I'm going to preserve my individuality. But at the same time, it's coming from humility. It's what Stephen Covey calls courage and consideration together. It comes with courage, but there's a lot of consideration for the other person as well. I mean, criticism is the same thing, right? Criticism is a very, very hard thing to give. If you have to criticize someone. That's interesting because criticism is really important. Number one, it's important to give criticism sometimes. And it's important to take criticism. The Rambam says, Maimonides tells us that one of the greatest ingredients to personal growth is the ability to take criticism, right? We're not talking about taking criticism, we're talking about giving criticism. Sometimes we have to criticize people. But there's so many different ways of criticizing people. And I'm going to repeat something that I've repeated many times, but I know that some people haven't been here, so I'm going to say it again. It's a beautiful formula, because we could do a whole session on criticism, but it's just a summary of the session. I think I told you this, that I heard of my grandfather who repeated from the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, who gave the following analogy for criticism. And again, same idea, different message. He gave an example from the old shtetl. There was a thing called there were public bathhouses that people used to go to, and in these bathhouses there were saunas. They used to call it in Yiddish a schwitzbad, where you go and give a good schwitz. And the way that used to happen was that on the schwitzbad there was a big fire. They used to create a lot of steam, and there were stairs, and people would climb, and heat rises, so you'd climb to the top. Eventually, when you got used to it, until you were really schwitzing and you're really very hot. And on the top, there was this guy called a beder. A beder was a guy who had this broom with bristles. And he would knock you on the back. He'd give you a good zet. So it was like some sort of massage type of formula. And apparently, it was very geschmack, as they call it. It was very, very good. And you give this good zet as you're schwitzing, and you turn to the guy and say, ah, that was good. Can you give me another one? Right? And the previous Rebbe says, imagine if you're walking down the street, and the same guy comes with his broom with bristles, and he whacks you on the back. What are you going to do? You whack him back. What do you mean? A chutzpah, a guy hits me in the middle of the street. So he says, what's the difference? And he said, the difference is very simple. He said, when the guy whacked you on the back on top of the sauna, on top of the schwitzbad, he did two things first. He lifted you up and he warmed you up. He says, when you lift someone up and you warm them up and then you give them a whack on the back, they ask for more. But if you don't warm them up first and you don't lift them up, they resist it. So the same thing here, the same idea. Giving criticism to someone when you have to is very difficult. Normally, as human beings, what we tend to do is we give people criticism that we're not supposed to give criticism to. You know, we criticize the whole world, so we'll sit the whole day and criticize Obama and Netanyahu and then this one and that one, right? Because we have no influence over it, so it's like just negative talk and it's nothing. I'm not such a fan of Obama. I just don't know. just make that clear. but sometimes it's a waste of time. It's good news. It's good conversation. But we know that we're supposed to give criticism, and the criticism we're supposed to give are specifically in our circle of influence. We all have a circle of influence, right? People who are out of our circle of influence, we should rather judge favorably. But people who are in our circle of influence, like our own children, our own close friends, our own family, those are the people that we have a moral obligation to sometimes criticize. Or a work colleague, or an employee, whatever the case is. Having that conversation is very difficult. And so often it's so unfair because we let it fester and people don't know what we want. And then later we come with a big complaint and we get frustrated and we lose our cool and they don't even know why. We'll talk about that in a minute. Right? So the conversation of criticism is one we have to have. It takes a lot of mountain, it takes a lot of strength to have the conversation, but it's got to be with humility. It's got to be with care for the person. The person has to feel we understand them, that we really care for them, that we're lifting them up, we're warming them up, then we can give criticism. So it's the mountain Har Sinai. It's a mountain of strength, but it's humble. And also it's how we keep the language. The language is kept with respect. It's never putting the person down. It's not harsh. It's not aggressive. It's that words of the wise are heard calmly. That's the first strategy. We're going to have to run through the other ones a little bit quickly. But the other one is clarity and care. Clarity and care is that we sometimes confuse. In Hebrew, we've talked about this before, there's two words for conversation, dibur and amira. Dibur means clear, structured speech. Amira means soft speech, cryptic speech, body language. So we have to be careful we don't confuse the two. When we have a conversation, what we want to convey needs to be conveyed clearly. Sometimes, very often, we have a difficult conversation, you have to criticize someone, you have to ask for someone, you're embarrassed to ask for, that kind of things. We start talking and we beat around the bush and the person has absolutely no idea what we're talking about. And just can't get it out, right? Because we want to keep the peace, but we don't want to overdo it, so therefore, what we say has to be clear. If you don't like the report the person did, if you don't like the performance, you have to say so. But your body language, the eye contact, the hidden language has to be with the care and with the real connection. So those two things have to work together and we shouldn't confuse the two. The third one is a very, very important one. It's called clarity of expectation, I was talking about before. One of the greatest problems in relationships often is that people don't know what we want. This happens in marriages, it happens in employee-employee relationships, it happens in friends, it happens in teachers and students. They just don't know what we want. If they knew what we wanted, they wouldn't have done this, wouldn't have said this. Right? So sometimes part of the difficult conversation has to be early on, to have the conversation early where we clarify what the expectation is. Now, we might not agree on the expectation, but a good start is for each of us to be clear what we each expect from this relationship, from this work agreement, from this experience, whatever the case is. So part of the difficult conversation has to be with clarity. If we want something, we need to be very clear and specific about what that expectation is. Or if we're even upset about something. We need to clarify what it is. Not you upset me yesterday. Upset yesterday, what are you talking about? We have to explain to the person what that is. We have to be specific. Right. Number four is sometimes we have to be ready to take some responsibility ourselves. Sometimes a harsh conversation works much better if we create a partnership. Right. If we need to pick out someone, criticize someone for doing something, or if we have to end the relationship, if we have to create boundaries in the relationship, whatever the case is, just take some responsibility. It works so much better. Say, listen, I know this is not all about you. It's not your fault. I'm part of this also. It's just right now, I can't handle this. Right now, I'm not ready yet for this type of interference, or I'm not ready for this type of strategy. I understand also maybe this is how you messed up because maybe I wasn't clear enough. Or probably I wasn't clear enough 6 weeks ago when I asked you to do this. I probably wasn't as clear enough, but it wasn't what I wanted. So if we take some responsibility, again, it creates those goals of creating a connection rather than division. The fifth one is very, very important, and that is listening. We've talked about listening at length other times, but just to mention it briefly, we have to be ready to listen with empathy. We don't know how difficult conversations are going to go. And sometimes when we enter into a difficult conversation, a tense conversation, the other person has what to answer and has what to say. And that's where our challenge begins. Sometimes we go into a conversation really well, and we're doing well, and we're talking respectfully and with empathy, and we're trying to care, and we're trying to be diplomatic, and we're trying to be strong at the same time. We're a man's sign, we're doing everything right. And then the person says, let me explain myself. And you kind of just give them the courtesy, but you really want them to get over and done with so you can finish the conversation. Here's the challenge. The challenge is we need to really listen, understand the other person's point of view, because we might change, we might shift a little bit. We need to understand the other person's world, as we talked about last week and other times at great length. So listening will have to become part of a difficult conversation. And finally, we need to stay focused. You see, this is the real challenge of a difficult conversation. When we go into a conversation, often, I've heard this from people so many times, you know, I tried speaking nicely, but just they pushed the wrong buttons and I just exploded, right? I really tried, but it just didn't work. Why doesn't it work? Because you enter into a conversation with a particular expectation. You create a boundary. You sit down with a person, you say, look, these are the boundaries, these are the rules, or you criticize someone, whatever the conversation is. And suddenly, the person takes it all wrong. And we're not perfect, maybe we didn't do it 100% right either. Or maybe that person is agitated. And the person takes it wrong and they say things that get us really upset. And suddenly we shift from humility to arrogance. We shift from the care that's about us into taking it personally and making it all about ourselves. And that's the challenge of a tense conversation. We need to go into a tense conversation that, come what may, we will not be swayed by the response. We go into a conversation knowing there can be all kinds of responses, but come what may, I'm going to stand my ground on both levels. I'm going to stand my ground because I have something that's really important to me that I have to see through. At the same time, I'm going to stand my ground to reach the goal of never humiliating someone else, not creating division, not creating disunity. I'm going to stay in my ground of not becoming sensitive, not becoming insulted, but staying focused on the goal. Which is to create a conversation of connection, a conversation of unity. That's the challenge of the conversation. So it's those six strategies. Then when we use these six strategies, we can, just to go back and see those, look at those five goals, we can not have resentment because we're having the conversation. We can create connection because we're doing it respectfully, even if it's a tough conversation. We pursue peace. We stand our ground like the mountain. We have the courage. We're not backing down just to become a doormat. And we're protecting the dignity of ourselves and of other people by staying focused and making sure we don't become derailed in the course of the conversation. Next week, we're going to end the series. Then we're going to start a 3-week short series, which I'll announce next week, the topic. But next week, we're going to talk about a whole different type of conversation, which is conversation in face of tragedy and mourning. Awkward conversations are difficult to have, sickness, these kind of things. We're not sure what to say and how to have them. And we're going to talk about that part of conversation. Thank you for all those who are helping us climb up with the raffle. If you haven't done so yet, please see the office. And have a great day. Welcome.